kiss your lips a thousand times, and more times than I can count. I have called you mine, you have stood by me.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, lots of commentaries, no guest. Of course, we begin always with the latest on health and nutrition. We're going to find out about some foods that can protect against type 2 diabetes, all of the good science on hyperbarics and healing, and we're going to give you that. Also, how to prevent multiple sclerosis naturally. Also, get into more benefits emerging about the type of omega-3 fatty acid, DHA, and why that's so important, which type you use to get the maximum benefit. Olive oil, well, it can help with breast cancer. And they've discovered something new in olive oil that is very important for that reason. Walking 2,000 steps each day will do something important for you. I'll talk about that. All of this comes from mainstream peer-reviewed literature. Then, from our environmental segment today, from Ralph Nader, I will share Ralph's commentary about the Fukushima secrecy syndrome. From Japan to America. This is really insightful. Then we'll go from there to Monsanto's BT toxins. New research from a major study shows that it kills human embryo cells. And this is brand new research and at a major institution published in a peer-reviewed journal. So we'll share that. Also today... Every time I enter my home or apartment, I take my shoes off. Anyone else does, I ask them to do the same. Sometimes they question it and say why, thinking it's a little eccentric or foolish. It isn't. And now, a brand new study by Dr. Charles Gerba, a microbiologist and professor at the University of Arizona, shows why you absolutely should take your shoes off when you enter any place. Brand new, you have not heard it, the CDC is challenged with covering up the influenza vaccine-related fetal deaths. This is from the Vaccine Information Network, and a Dr. Gary Goldman has released a study report. 4,250% spike in fetal deaths reported just 1 year. And why? Vaccine, the flu vaccine in the mothers. We'll go into that. Then today, there's a woman, a nurse at a hospital in Ohio, who was asked to take the flu vaccine, refused, and so she was fired. She sued. Now other nurses are suing hospitals for loss of employment due to mandatory flu shots. I'll give some positive information in this area and why it's important. Commentaries today, two important ones. One from Michael Payne and from Op-Ed News on monumental unrestrained military spending is crippling America. And then more than 2,400 dead as Obama's drone campaign marks 5 years, from Jack Serial, from the Bureau of Investigative Journalism. But hold on. President Obama and all of his top military experts and their talking heads say, no innocent civilians. Not true. 2,400. Now just imagine, unlike in the United States, in the Middle East, you can have up to 60 people in extended families. So multiply 2,400 times 60 in the immediate family context. And you're dealing in some serious numbers about people who hold a different position now that they have been victimized. That's only the dead. That's not the injured. And the injured are 10 times that. I'll share that with you. if time permits, from our issue segment of our program today, the dramatic decline in industrial agriculture could herald peak food. This is according to Nafees Ahmed from The Guardian. By the way, in my opinion, the finest newspaper in the world is The Guardian. Nothing comes close. Now, what does it mean, peak food? Well, I'm going to be doing 3 weeks on the Progressive Commentary Hour. One is on peak water. One is on peak food. And one is on, I'm also dealing with about five topics. But the peak water and peak food are the two that most people are going to find immediately important. But I'm having the top people in the world talk about how we're running out of water. I mean, literally running out of water. It doesn't mean that there's any less water. It just means that where there was water, there isn't. And there was only 1% of the world's water that was drinkable to begin with. That's substantially declining. So where we don't want water, we're getting more of it. Where we need water, we're getting less of it. And it's also true for the soil. Big time. And then for those who believe that all we need are people stop complaining. Go out and get a job. And everything will be all right. No. People are getting jobs. And it's not all right because they can't earn enough to support themselves, pay their bills. So I want to dispel some myths. I'm going to give you 11 different types of jobs that millions of people are working at, and they work hard at this, and they're not making literally anything from which to live. And I'll share that with you as well. As you see, we have a lot of topics, all meant to empower people with knowledge and insight and options. Diabetes was not even in the top 10 killers 30 years ago. Today, it's right near the top of the list, behind stroke, heart attack, cancer, diabetes. In fact, more people have diabetes today and pre-diabetes than cancer, heart disease, and high blood pressure. Forget stroke. If you took all the people with post-stable hypertension, heart disease, and cancer, diabetes is ahead of all that combined. So we're dealing with a really serious situation. From the University of East Anglia and the Norwich Medical School and King's College London, two separate groups say the following, quote, blueberries, celery, and grapes may reduce the risk of diabetes. Why? Well, you've heard it many times. Flavonoids. Flavo, F-L-A-V-O, noids, N-O-I-D-S, flavonoids. And including within this group are the anthocyanins. Antho, A-N-T-H-O, cyanins, C-Y-A-N-I-N-S, and other compounds. Now, your berries are at the top of the list. Green tea is right beside it, and healthy chocolate as compared to unhealthy chocolates beside that. And those now, according to this, can protect against type 2 diabetes. Quote, from the study, our research looked at the benefits of eating certain subgroups of flavonoids. We focused on flavones, which are found in herbs and vegetables such as parsley, thyme, and celery, and anthocyanins found in berries, red grapes, wine, and other red or blue-colored fruits and vegetables. This is one of the first large-scale human studies to look at how those powerful bioactive compounds might reduce the risk of diabetes. Laboratory studies have shown these types of foods might modulate blood glucose regulation affecting the risk of type 2 diabetes. And it did. They used 2,000 women for this study. And they took blood samples, analyzed the glucose regulation, inflammation, insulin resistance, all that. And the takeaway message, published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Nutrition, when you eat your fruits and vegetables, especially the berries and celery and parsley, you can help protect yourself against one of the major killers on the planet. I can remember the first time I saw a hyperbaric oxygen chamber. I thought, well, that's interesting. Mainly they were used for people with the bends, or who deep divers, or for burn victims. But we now know this, and this is the most important thing that could help save you or someone's brain. Hyperbaric oxygen protects brain tissue in people who've had a stroke. As long ago as 7 years. So you may have had a stroke a year ago. Get hyperbaric. This is the latest from Fayetteville Observer, North Carolina. Hyperbaric's healing power may be an answer for more patients, say advocates. More than 2 years ago, Lordell Ivy got horrible news. His leg had had to go. A small wound on his right shin had worsened rather than healed over more than 2 years. His doctor told him amputation was necessary to keep it contained. I didn't want to give it up. And this was at the Southeastern Wound Healing Center in Lumberton, where he sought a second opinion. 2 months ago, Ivy walked out of the clinic. His leg healed. Ivy received a long series of treatments to close the wound that had caused him pain. And he and his doctors credit hyperbaric oxygen therapy with pushing him over the top in healing the troublesome spot. The treatments, which place patients in pressurized chambers while periodically breathing pure oxygen, are approved for a number of conditions, including carbon monoxide poisoning, decompression sickness, that's the bends, severe anemia, radiation injury, acute thermal burns, and other skin and wound problems. But some feel that a lack of awareness among the medical community and the general public about hyperbarics and other wound care means some patients don't get the specialization they need. And then it goes on to talk about the fact that it can heal these wounds. Reality. We could save most of the people who die of bed sores. Bed sore is what? It's an ulcer. Why does a person get an ulcer? Well, because their immune system is weakened and because there's a lack of stimulation to the musculature. There's a lack of keeping the skin clean and with stimulation. So these are things based on negligence. How bad is it? 88,000 people died of bed sores in hospitals or nursing homes in one recent year. That's a lot of people to die that didn't need to. So if you know someone who's got an ulcer, a bed sore, get them into hyperbaric. Someone who has gangrene, get them into hyperbaric. Someone who's had a stroke, definitely get them into hyperbaric. You could save their lives or limbs. Next up, how to prevent PMS naturally. I'm asked this all the time, and because people assume that it's going to happen. You know, PMS happens 7 to 10 days before your period. What are the symptoms? Well, each person is different. And some it can be multiple. Craving foods, breast tenderness, swelling, weight gain, headaches, cramps, bloating, joint pain, acne, irritability, fatigue, depression, and anxiety. And wanting to, you know, I wouldn't say insomnia, but wanting to get a grip on how to reverse this becomes almost impossible for some people because your average medical treatment doesn't deal with any of this effectively. But we know how to do it naturally. How? Balance prostaglandins. How do you do that? With the omega-3s. Prostaglandins are a type of fatty acid that exert hormone-like effects and increase leading to many of the typical PMS symptoms like cramps, breast pain, headaches, digestive problems, and swelling. Now, certain prostaglandins are inflammatory in nature, where the omega-3s encourage the production of anti-inflammatory prostaglandins, which in turn eases PMS symptoms, gets rid of the cramps, breast tenderness, bloating, and headaches. So that's important. Calcium and magnesium, for example, work together to regulate many things within the body. That can help alleviate cramps, and pain, and generally, women taking calcium for 3 menstrual cycles, there's a 40% decrease in total PMS-related symptom scores. That's terrific. Magnesium is right there also. Vitamin B6 for a better mood. I suggest 100 milligrams daily of vitamin B6. But I'm not alone. I found 9 separate high-quality studies in the peer-reviewed literature supporting the pyridoxal 5-phosphate. That's what your body converts vitamin B6 into. Also, there are certain foods to eat during your period if you suffer from PMS. You don't want the foods that your body may crave loaded with saturated fats and sugar. That's not good. You want to get rid of the caffeine and salt also. That's not good. You want the anti-inflammatory fruits, nuts, and vegetables. Walnuts, pine nuts, pistachios with the nut butters, all good for you. Apples, apple juice, apple celery juice, terrific for you. Watermelon and lemon juice. That's right, 16-ounce glass of watermelon juice with 2 lemons, terrific for you. Now, finally, according to Oregon State University, who did the research, a study of the metabolic effects of the omega-3 fatty acids, especially DHA, concludes that these compounds may have an even wider range of biological impacts in a good way than previously considered. And the research was done at Oregon State and several other institutions, and they found that the DHA is great for reducing blood triglycerides. That's terrific. Turning off inflammation. That's terrific. So you want to make sure that you get a good quality omega-3 fatty acid. And there's thousands of studies on the omega-3s. And take it once a day unless you have a condition that would require you to take it more often, in which case that's fine also. Also helps your liver. For people who have sclerosis of the liver, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, hepatitis, you definitely should be taking that. But I also wouldn't limit to taking that. I would also be taking the black cumin seed oil. And this was confirmed also at Ohio State University, Baylor College of Medicine, Vanderbilt University Medical School, and the National Institutes of Health. One last point here, and that is that from Houston Methodist Cancer Center, they found that a major component of olive oil, what is called hydroxy, H-Y-D, hydrox, R-O-X-Y, tyrosol, T-Y-R-O-S-O-L. They found that that chemical found in olive oil can help reduce the risk of breast cancer. That's a big deal. There was a Dr. Patel, medical doctor, breast medical oncologist, and they led the study and found that postmenopausal women were more likely to reduce their risk if they had the olive oil. Well, you go to the Mediterranean and breast cancer is very rare there. But then again, they have the highest consumption of olive oil in the world there. That's our health and nutrition segment. I'm Gary Knoll. And now we're going to take you to our public health segment and our environmental segment. And in the environmental segment, we're going to have Dr. Vandana Shiva, who gave a brief talk, about 10 minutes, on a topic of genetically modified and broadening the picture of it. In other words, why should we be concerned about the quality of food we eat? Why should we just assume that GMO foods are safe? Because we're told so? We shouldn't. What it means. She's one of the greatest philosophers on the subject of environmental issues, and we'll go to her in just a moment after this. First, is there a cover-up at the CDC? Did they knowingly falsify information, mislead the public about a 4,250% increase in fetal deaths reported by Dr. Gary Goldman in a study in 1 year? And his article was originally rejected by the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology. And that is what the National Coalition of Organized Women say. They say that they're all complicit in a massive cover-up and manipulation of data associated with the 2009-10 flu season fetal deaths, which, by the way, is now available free to the public. You can see this. It was subsequently published in the Human and Experimental Toxicological Journal as a Sage Choice Study. And it's also listed in PubMed as a free PMC article. But here's the gist of it. Despite an apparent trail of documented collusion and misconduct amongst the CDC and the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology, and nine nonprofits, including the Martha of Dimes, this alarmingly poor outcome of the vaccine experiment on the fetuses of pregnant women was successfully covered up by the CDC until Dr. Goldman exposed the statistics documenting the harm in his recent publication. A Dr. Maria McCormick, chairman of the CDC's H1N1 Vaccine Safety Risk and Assessment Working Group, testified and submitted deceptive reports to the Department of Health and Human Services containing no unusual signals nor adverse outcomes in the pregnant population occurred during the 2009 public experiments on pregnant women. However, pressed by the National Coalition of Women, statistics extracted from the government's own data, mind you, we're only dealing with the government's own data here, a Dr. Shimba Kukuro of the Center for Disease Control corroborated the National Coalition of Women's data in a public presentation in Atlanta, Georgia, and this contradiction to Dr. McCormick's testimony evidences that the CDC indeed knew of the increasing level in fetal loss reports in real time. Yet the CDC failed to immediately notify the nation's OGBYNs, who uniformly chose to not accept that this was a legitimate concern, and continued to double-dose their pregnant patients with the fatal flu shots that collectively delivered up to 50 micrograms of mercury. And due to the success of this well-orchestrated cover-up and the complicity of the nonprofits in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology, pregnant women are now pressured to get four vaccine doses, the flu and the TDAP, and therefore mandated to give up to a 49 vaccine doses to their surviving children in order for them to attend school. Quote, if vaccines were actually based upon science, then this public experiment is a failure. End quote, says Mrs. Daneman, director of the National Coalition of Organized Women and founder of the Vaccine Liberation Army. Quote, so why are we still vaccinating pregnant women with even more vaccines when there is no science that proves vaccines are safe for the developing child? On the contrary, available data from this public experiment foisted on unwitting pregnant women proves the opposite, that the influence of vaccines are unsafe and exacerbate fetal deaths, end quote. So, for this audience, you have the information, please pass it on, that the CDC and these others have engaged in a crime against humanity. There should be a federal investigation. There should be a criminal investigation, in my opinion. When you increase the death rate by 4,250%, independently confirmed by Dr. Gary Goldman and published in the Journal of Human and Experimental Toxicology Journal, and it's covered up? No. When we are a nation killing developing fetuses just to promote vaccines because our jobs in the future are going to be with the vaccine makers, now, this is criminal behavior, and these people should be brought to justice. Someone else that we should be concerned about is Monsanto. This is from Christina Sarich, Natural Society. Quote, Monsanto's BT toxins found to kill human embryo cells. Wow. You haven't heard this. You won't see it in the mainstream media. I can promise you, Charlie Rose won't touch this. CNN's Anderson Cooper would not touch this. Many individuals have heard it a million times. But for the uninformed or those just looking to fuel their 2014 fire to finally defeat Monsanto and their cronies, you'll be interested to know that Monsanto's BT toxin is far from safe as the chemical company claimed it would be when filing their case with the FDA. New research from Canada shows that BT toxins are showing up in pregnant women, and lo and behold, they are killing human embryonic cells. It's called reproductive toxicology. And just like their suicide seeds, these BT toxins are starting to kill our own unborn children. This is no exaggeration. Hopefully, this will compel people to take action. It's time to put Monsanto to rest. It's time they were held accountable. BT toxins are prominent in genetically altered crops such as corn, soy, wheat, and others, called Cry1AB. That's CRY1AB, and they can be lethal. Not only do these Cry toxins target the kidney cells of developing human fetuses, but when Cry1AB and Cry1AC are combined with Roundup, they can delay programmed cell death, and what's worse, glyphosate, the main ingredient in Roundup, also causes necrosis, meaning the death of human tissue, and this happens even when the substance is found in much smaller amounts than what is currently being used on our agricultural crops. The stuff is still carcinogenic in parts per trillion range. Excuse me. So that's the latest on this. So one more reason to challenge Monsanto. Now, one of the reasons I take my shoes off when I earn my home, I didn't when I came to New York City, I didn't know there'd be a reason to, is one day at the Institute, I noticed that half the staff didn't come in. They were sick with flu. And I was upstairs on the third floor. They were all downstairs. They only had one bathroom. And I just thought, is it possible that germs are floating around and they're not realizing, even though there were doors you go through that had all the different ultraviolet lights that are spectrum lights to kill different bacteria and viruses? Maybe they're getting contaminated and they're not aware of it. I didn't carry out the experiment, but about 2 weeks later, at my suggestion, one of the bacteriologists, virologists did. Simple experiment. They coated an entire toilet with an agar that you would put in a petri dish to grow out a medium. Then one person went in and used the bathroom, but left the toilet seat open and flushed the toilet. They then went in with a special counter that they had that could count bacteria and virus, and they found over 500,000 bacteria and thousands of viruses on everything in there. In effect, the toilet had sneezed, which means that every time you use a toilet and you leave the seat open, it sneezes, which means the bacteria and viruses just kind of float in the air because they're very light, and then they drop on everything. So they were going to drop on your toothbrush and your soap and your towels, everything. Which is one of the reasons you should always put the lid down when you use the bathroom. So then I thought, well, gee whiz, if that's the case, then what are we dragging in on our shoes? So I simply took a running shoe I had been using, and even though I wash my sneakers generally every 2 weeks, I'll put some bleach in, clean them with some natural cleaning material, disinfects everything, and then let it sit out in the sun in that cleans it out, but I took one that I hadn't washed yet, but had just been running in. an enormous amount of bacteria was picked up off of it, including some pathogenic bacteria. Here's the latest. So just keep this in mind when you wear your shoes in your house, because everything on your shoes is going to be on your floor. It's going to dry, go in the air, and then you're going to be breathing it. Quote, Dr. Charles Gerba, a microbiologist and professor at the University of Arizona, joined forces with others to study the types of microorganisms that are transported by footwear. 10 people were given a brand new pair of shoes to use for 2 weeks before having them tested for bacteria. After 2 weeks, more than 420,000 units of bacteria were found on the outside of the test shoes. Of that bacteria, 27% were deadly E. coli viruses. Also detected was a form of pneumonia called the Klebsiella, and also that can cause wound and bloodstream infections, and the Serratia faecalia, which can lead to infections of the respiratory tract. Quote, the common occurrence, 96% of coliform and E. coli bacteria on the outside of the shoes indicates frequent contact with fecal material, which most likely originates from floors in public restrooms or on contact with animal fecal material outdoors. Our study also indicates the bacteria can be tracked by shoes over a long distance into our home or personal space after the shoes were contaminated with bacteria, end quote. Even more disturbing to moms of little ones, 99% of bacteria found on the exterior of shoes was transmitted to hard tile and carpet. Any germs picked up by bare feet, knees, hands will then be transported to the crib at nap time. So just keep your shoes outside, because it could make you a lot healthier. And finally, from our environmental segment today, from Ralph Nader, from an article that appeared in the Public Interest. Quote, the Fukushima secrecy syndrome from Japan to America. Last month, the ruling Japanese coalition parties quickly rammed through Parliament a state secrets law. We Americans better take notice. Under this provision, the government alone decides what are state secrets, and any civil servants who divulge any secrets can go to jail for up to 10 years. Any journalist caught in the web of this vaguely defined law can be jailed for up to 5 years. Government officials have been upset at the constant disclosures of their laxity by regulatory officials before and after the Fukushima power disaster operated by Tokyo Electric Power Company. Week after week, reports appear in the press revealing the seriousness of the contaminated water flow, the inaccessible radioactive material deep inside these reactors, and the need to stop these leaking sites from further poisoning the land, food, and ocean. Officials now estimate that it could take up to 40 years to clean up and decommission the reactors. Other factors are also feeding this issue that are a sign of democratic setback. Militarism is rising in the area, mainly because of a friction with China over the South China Sea. Dismayingly, U.S. militarists are pushing for a larger Japanese military budget. China is the latest national security justification for our pivot to East Asia, provoked in part by our military-industrial complex. Draconian secrecy in government and fast-tracking bills through legislative bodies are bad omens for freedom of the Japanese press and freedom to dissent by the Japanese people. Freedom of information and robust debate, the latter cut off sharply by Japan's parliament, are the currencies of democracy. There is a good reason why the New York Times continues to cover the deteriorating conditions in the desolate, evacuated Fukushima area. Our country has licensed many reactors here with the same designs and many of the same inadequate safety and inspection standards. Some reactors here are near earthquake faults with surrounding populations which cannot be safely evacuated in case of serious damage to the electrical plant. The two Indian Point reactors that are 30 miles north of New York City are a case in point. The less we're able to know about the past and present conditions of Fukushima, the less we will learn about atomic reactors in our own country. Fortunately, many of the Japan's most famous scientists, including Nobel laureates, have led the opposition against this new state secrecy legislation, with 3,000 academics signing a public letter of protest. These scientists and academics declared that government secrecy law a threat to the, quote, pacifist principles and fundamental human rights established by the Constitution should be rejected immediately. Following this statement, the Japanese Scientists Association, Japan's mass media companies, and citizen association, lawyers' organizations, some regional legislators oppose the legislation. Polls show the public also opposes this attack on democracy. The present ruling parties remain adamant. They cite as reasons for state secrecy, quote, national security. Yeah? Well, that sounds familiar. And that's Ralph Nader. We're going to take a brief break, come back, and then you're going to hear from Dr. Vandana Shiva on why we should be concerned about genetic engineering, sustainability, patenting of seeds in life, heirloom seeds. She covers all this in a relatively short 10 minutes. And then I'll share with you a commentary on monumental, unrestrained military spending is crippling America. And then we'll go to our talk back, your opportunity to call in and share your thoughts, your views on issues that you find important or questions as well. I also want to mention that on Monday, I will be spending the better part or the entire program on an original, in-depth investigative report, a white paper. It's part of the white paper series that I've been presenting on radio for a long time, on our sister station BAI for 38 years. It is called Sugar, Killing Us Sweetly. I will cite all the current problems with sugar, including the fact that it is contributing to more disease than almost anything out there. It's killing more people and causing more death than even cigarettes. How is that possible that the mainstream media hasn't caught up on this or done its homework? Well, it's not because the science is not there. I will cite the actual journals, and these are all mainstream peer-reviewed journals. I will cite the topics of the studies, and then at the end of the article, I will cite over 80 peer-reviewed studies supporting each of the statements that I am making. Why do I do this? For the same reason that we do last year's 16 different articles and different topics, because the public wants to know, it's their right to know, and these are tools for change. We all have problems in our society. It's how we deal with them, the solutions that count. And if we can get the fluoride out of our water, good. But you need good evidence to do that. You have to convince your community boards that you want to get rid of fluoride. You can't just go in there and say, I'm against fluoride. They want to say, well, where's the science to show that we shouldn't have it? Well, we have that. I have that article. If you don't want to vaccinate, if it's your choice not to, then you should have the science to say, I don't want to do this and I'm not going to, and not because of a religious objection or philosophical objection. It's because of a health objection. You don't have any science showing that this vaccine is safe and effective. You may think you do. Well, you don't. How do you know you don't? Because here's the articles that show that you haven't any. And the articles you did publish, they have all been deconstructed. These were all industry-supported articles. There's no double-blind placebo-controlled study ever. You don't have 10,000 children that you gave a sugar pill to and 10,000 children you gave all these vaccines to and followed them for 6 years to see which illnesses, what mortality was in both groups. You haven't done the basics. You lie. And we have the article to prove it, which reminds me, for the woman, the nurse in Michigan, who filed a $100 million class action lawsuit against the hospital that fired her for refusing a flu vaccine as required for employment, and the other woman in Ohio, a former hospital employee, is suing the Coshocton County Memorial Hospital, being fired for not getting a mandatory flu vaccine. Karen Good, of Warsaw. Here's my suggestion. For all nurses, all doctors, orderlies, anyone working in a hospital that requires you to get a vaccine, please go to my website. You will find 27 articles. These are not just opinion pieces. I don't write opinion pieces. These are scholarship articles, deep scholarship, so deep that lawyers and public interest groups from around the world take them every single day in order to use in courts of law. In fact, every article I write is vetted by my own in-house attorneys that work for me. And these are scholars to make sure that the information is there and will stand cross-examination. So if you don't want to get a vaccine and they're going to threaten you, then you look for the information, take the articles, and then you can sue them. And you could win because you'll have real science on your side. All they have on their side is posturing and political power. So take a look. We have those there to help you make better choices. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Quick program announcement. We are looking for someone to translate one of our manuscripts from English to Spanish. And you must have professional translation experience. You'll be paid for it in a good wage because I'm going to be translating all of my books that are relevant into Spanish. And I have 5 new books coming out this year. So give a call. You can reach out, send your resume to Jeremy, that's J-E-R-E-M-Y, Jeremy at GaryNall.com. His phone number is 646-926-5434. So if you'd like to earn a good income doing something important, English to Spanish, but you have to have experience in the field. Now let's hear from Dr. Vandana Shiva. Oh, by the way, for all of our listeners from our sister station on PFW in Washington, as I mentioned recently, I am advocating on your behalf to have your premiums clear back from October and some from even August, and as well as December, so that you can get them. I realize you haven't received any. That's because of difficulties at the station and their cash flow. I have sent the request on to Summer Reese, the executive director, who's, I believe, doing a very good job with the circumstance at hand, and let them know, please help the listeners. Get them their premiums. We've done all that we can, but we'll keep reminding them. Every single day of the week, I send an email, and I leave a message. Don't forget the listeners. They're important. They count. Now to Dr. Vandana Shiva.
Fellow seed keepers, seed warriors, defenders of food freedom. We're coming to the end of a year of strength and determination. We're coming to the end of a year where marches against Monsanto allowed people from every walk of life and every corner of the world to rise in self-organized freedom and power. It's also the year Monsanto gave itself a World Food Prize to counter the propaganda that they didn't think was good for them. So they unleashed their own propaganda machinery. as well as their aggression. I have never, in my 30 years of dealing with GMOs and the corporate giants, the old war industry which became the agrochemical industry, which is now the seed industry, used the kind of brutal, violent force that they're now using. And that's what we have to face in 2014. It was the year when, across the world in desperation, Monsanto started to push laws that would destroy the alternatives that people are choosing in their freedom. Gardens are exploding everywhere, both because people want to turn to living with the earth, but also because people want to know what they're eating. They want to grow their own food. And seed saving has spread across the world, as we witnessed in the Global Citizens Campaign for Seed Freedom. These movements are sowing the seeds of a beautiful, livable, free future. And those are the seeds that Monsanto and friends would like to destroy. So country after country, there is an attempt to pass seed laws, to make it illegal to have seeds that are open, that are free, that are renewable, and replace them with seeds that are industrially bred, uniform, and covered with intellectual property rights, either patents or breeders' rights. Some of these laws come in the garb of UPOV. Some of these laws come in the garb of compulsory registration. But whether you look at the Seed Act that is proposed by the European Commission, or the harmonization laws and the breeders' laws and plant variety protection laws of Africa, or Canadian laws, or the laws in Central and Latin America, everywhere the attempt is to impose uniformity and criminalize diversity. At a time where we know diversity produces more, as the Navdanya report, Health Per Acre, shows, that diversity is the only source of resilience and evolution into a climate unstable world. Imposing uniformity is not just destroying diversity, it is imposing vulnerability, it is imposing malnutrition, it is imposing hunger. And these laws have to be resisted, as we resisted them in India. In 2004, there was an attempt to pass such a law for compulsory registration. The new draft has been forced to recognize that the farmers have been the original breeders. Their rights cannot be touched. And in Colombia, the peasants marched and undid the intellectual property rights clauses related to seed in the US-Colombia Free Trade Agreement. We'll have to keep saying no to these laws everywhere across the world. And the law of the seed that we have drafted, that is available on Navdanya's website, is tapping the best of science and is tapping the best of jurisprudence. It's bad science to impose uniformity in a world that can only produce sustainably through diversity. It is so wrong to privatize the intellectual and biological commons through patenting and breeders' rights. The real law of the seed has to be based on diversity and resilience, on reclaiming the commons. And that is something we will do, and we'll have to keep doing till the seed is free and we are free. But the seed freedom is so intimately related to food freedom, as we have witnessed in the demands for labeling and the right to know. Again, across the world, most of the countries have labeling laws. But in the US, in 2012, the labeling effort in California was defeated by money, $40 million. Again, in Washington, the same was done. And yet Hawaii, people have marched all year. I was there in January, and the movements haven't stopped. And they're moving very effectively towards getting labeling. But most importantly, they have decided in their hearts and their minds that their right to know and choose is a fundamental right in any democracy, which cannot be a democracy if it is not a food democracy. our work for 2014 for celebrating and defending our seed freedom and food freedom is clearly laid out for us. In the area of seed freedom, the big challenge is to deal with these laws imposing uniformity and monopoly so that we can have free sharing of seed and the saving of seed and the growing of good food through good seed. Every dictatorship has used uniformity, whether it was the dictatorships of religion or the dictatorships based on race like apartheid. We remember and honor Nelson Mandela, and the fight for seed freedom and food freedom continues in the tradition of Gandhi and King and Nelson Mandela. And that tradition cannot be extinguished. Never, ever in human history has dictatorship lasted forever. But freedom goes on and on and on. And in this year, 2013, as so much science started to show, first, that the assumptions of genetic engineering based on genetic determinism and genetic reductionism are wrong. Across the world, the new science of epigenetics is showing that the environment influences the genes, and genes are not one-way directions of a master molecule giving instructions. Across the world, agroecology is being recognized as the most sophisticated science of agriculture than industrial agriculture. The International Assessment of Agricultural Science and Technology for Development, or the FAO, showing that small farmers produce more, or the ILO, giving a wake-up call to turn towards ecological farming. Every institution of the United Nations is recognizing that ecological farming and agroecology has to be the basis of the future. And yet at this time, one of the most important papers published by Dr. Seralini through peer review in the Journal of Food and Chemical Toxicology started to get attacked. And now they've even replaced the editor of the journal with a Monsanto man, Dr. Goodman, and had something done that doesn't get done in science. A paper is published, it's published. The only thing you do is, if you have a better idea and if you can find fault, write another paper. But that's not how the new corporate dictators are functioning. They take over journals and then have papers retracted without scientific debate. This is a knowledge dictatorship. And an important element of our work in 2014 will be to defend the freedom of knowledge, knowledge sovereignty, the independence of knowledge and science from this corporate manipulation. And this manipulation is happening at the level of imposing an outmoded, mechanistic, deterministic, reductionist model of science on the world that knows better. I did my PhD in quantum theory. We know the world is a non-separable world, and they're working on separation and determinism as the very basis of doing genetic engineering. Controlling journals, Nature, Science, Scientific American, the Journal of Chemical Toxicology, Food Toxicology. And that's not all. To capture the mind of those who are saying no to GMOs, to confuse people, they've now unleashed a bunch of PR people. 2013 was the year Mark Lynas emerged on the horizon, saying he's a founder of the anti-GM movement. We were five of us who started to question the science of genetic determinism, who started to question the entry of the war industry into our seed and into life sciences. Mark Lynas was nowhere around. So the first lie is that he's a founder. The second lie is that he's found the science. Because the real science is telling us we need to work on biosafety. We need to ensure there's a right to know. We cannot rush ahead with imposing hazards on the world. Lies will not last. Truth always wins. In India, we have a beautiful phrase, Satyamev Jayate. Truth always wins. Sowing fear in people's minds by hounding scientists and activists does not win. Fear doesn't win. Fearlessness and courage wins. Dividing people, hijacking institutions is an anti-democratic terrorist act in our times. This new form of terrorism doesn't yet have a name, but we experience it in our daily lives, and we will have to transcend it for real freedom. 2014 will be a year where we will join hands and be strong.
That is Dr. Vandana Shiva. We're out of time. I look forward to sharing more on our next program, and our next program will be the most comprehensive, in-depth discussion of sugar and its dangers, all fully backed up by qualified science. Look forward to sharing that with you. Have a nice day, everyone. Now let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice. Well, she's coming up in a moment. And don't forget, Sunday night, 8 o'clock. At that time, I'll be taking on resveratrol, why it's really good. And if you know someone who smokes, they'll definitely want that. And why walking 2,000 steps, that's not a lot, will do a lot for you, could extend your lifespan. Television damages the brain structure of children. I'm going to discuss that. Of course, that depends upon what you're watching, of course, and how much you watch. And in fact, I'm actually looking forward to The Walking Dead coming back, the only program I found of value on television, quite frankly. And how polyphenols can slash inflammation markers and actually changes your microorganisms in your gut. That's important. And have you ever heard of fulvic acid, F-U-L-V-I-C? Well, it's amazing what it does for you. And I'll tell you how you get it into your body and what it can do once it's in the body and all the good things that can happen. And vitamins can reduce breast cancer death, according to a new study. That's on our Sunday night show, plus a whole lot more on Talkback, so you won't want to miss Sunday night, 8 o'clock. Now let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Today we are going to be discussing Detroit as Detroit's engineered bankruptcy as the new urban paradigm.
I'm looking forward to that.
And okay.
In fact, I waited all night. I didn't really sleep. No.
Just for that. Well, the thing is, it's going to be the first part. We're going to be following this because it's really, when you look at it, you know, there's a method to this madness of supposedly driving the line that Detroit is bankrupt. And we want to take a look at that because it sets in play a domino effect for other cities as well.
I've been to Detroit many, many, many times. I've seen what the city once was, and I see what it is, and I see how it got there. And the trouble is the truth about its decline and fall and the responsibility has never been properly examined by the mainstream media. If they did, they would have to then blame Reagan, Clinton, Bush Sr., and Obama. They were all part of it. The banks were a part of it. The privatization, the offshoring of jobs, making cheaper products in the South. In fact, you could look for a lot of those jobs that once were in and a living wage job with protections, now being down South as cheap labor. People are afraid to write about it. They're afraid to show the truth because once you open that door, all this truth is going to come forward. So your show is one of those shows that opens the door, and if it doesn't budge, you kick it in and get to the truth. So that's why we like it. Utrice Lead right now.